Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It doesn't even have any
control. I'm mostly coming out. Most of all.
There are
certain
rules.
Short round.
The Majesty.
Destroy Argos!
Let loose the last of the Titans.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Clash of the Titans. The good. The evil. The danger. The daring.
How may a mortal man face and defeat the Kraken?
Welcome back to Bullet Time, 80s Action Rewind. I am your host with the most, Ryan. And in the studio with me are my cohorts, David.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
And today we are going to do an absolute banger from 1981. Another banger from 1981. If you guys listened to our last show, we covered Escape from New York, Snake Plissken. If you want to, go back and listen to that show. That is the second of our three movies. The first one was Masters of the Universe. And this, our third movie that we are covering in this trifecta, is another 1981 film, Clash of the Titans. Now, preface this before we even get started. Out of the three films that we have covered, Clash of the Titans might be the one that looks the most dated. By a little bit,
mm-hmm.
But I can tell both of you fine gentlemen that it was the one out of the three that gave me the most feel good. I felt like a kid again watching it vibes.
Yeah, I would agree. The visual effects are dated, although I appreciate the craftsmanship that goes into making the amazing looking stop motion for the time.
Yes.
But this movie is also, I'll raise you this. Ryan.
Okay.
This movie also may have the most dated look, but it is the best written script of the three. Like, the story is still solid. It still holds up. It's very well put together.
Totally agree. I totally 100% agree. So this film was released in 1981. A lot of badass shit came out in 1981. Okay.
81. My God, yes.
81 was killing it. Okay. So released in 1981, directed by Desmond Davis. This was produced by Ray Harryhausen. If you guys, that name sounds familiar, he's kind of a big deal. And Charles H. Schneer. This was Harryhausen's final film before he retired. The guy did some, like, an insane amount of insane movies. So yes. Guy was around a long time. It blends a Greek mythology, an epic adventure, and groundbreaking, like Mike said, stop motion visual effects. For the time, this was one of those movies that you would go in and your brain would explode. I mean, for lack of a better term.
Dude, I mean, when I was a little kid watching this,
was the coolest thing ever.
I was beside myself. I'm like, What am I watching this now?
But even
this
today,
is so good.
Even today, I mean, yes, all the effects are dated, but going back and rewatching this brings me so much joy. Yep. As looking at like the craftsmanship, some of the scenes still holds up. Where it's like you're going, my God, there's so many scenes that I just pull out of here.
We would need a whole other hour to break down all those scenes.
So easily. This movie is a movie that I, as a kid, okay, I watched quite a few times. Mm-hmm. And this would be like, if you showed, this is the best way to describe it, okay? I use this analogy a lot. if you were to take this movie back to like 1910, people's heads would fucking explode. It'd be like taking it'd be like taking Transformers, the first one, back to 1950, and people's eyes would melt. Like, this movie is, we're going to get into it, but this movie starred Harry Hamlin as Perseus, Judy Bowker as Andromeda, and Laurence Olivier as Zeus. So it had some big names for the time. Also, Maggie Smith is in this. And if you guys know that name, that is Professor McGonagall from Harry Potter.
Yep.
And she looks incredibly young in this movie. It's actually wild because all I ever remember her as is being old. So this movie is, again, known for its pretty, it's a very grand scale feeling movie. Practical craftsmanship. There's a lot of really neat practical effects, a mythic storytelling, and honestly, pre-CGI, kind of pre like heavy CGI era. So this is like practical effects, stop motion, a lot of uses of, close-ups and then practical effect and then a stop motion. Like, we'll talk about it with the character Calabas.
Oh my God.
One of my favorite characters in this movie.
You know, this movie, you said Ray Harryhausen. Is that you say his last name? Mm-hmm. So this was made at the tail end of the stop motion era.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just before like the Star Wars style started taking, not taking over, but becoming more common practice.
Yeah. Because like during this time, Clash of the Titans is honestly considered a masterpiece in stop motion. You brought up the whole character of Calabos. The way they shot Calabos and treated that character, he was not just a live action actor.
Yes.
He was a stop motion figure.
Yeah, they had an asset double.
If you guys are new here to Bullet Time 80s Action Rewind, some of the things that we like to cover, I am a prop and costume nerd. So I am your resident prop and costume nerd here. Mike and David are both film guys. So they're going to talk about sets. They'll talk about shots and things like that. We also like to have some fun facts, and we keep it very light. All the movies that we cover here on 80s Bullet Time 80s Action Rewind are films that we love, and there will be no hatred in here whatsoever. So we like to...
There'll be certain people that's on the network that'll never make a guest appearance.
Yes, they will never guest spot on this show.
His name starts with a T.
It sounds like Lamas and starts with a T. There's just people on the network that will probably never see these films or have seen them and will watch them again. So one of the things I like to do is go over some fun facts before we jump into like our main points. So this was considered Harryhausen's swan song. Kind of like his last movie that he did. He kind of pulled out all the stops with the creature effects and things like that. Like Mike said, this was kind of at the end of stop motion and like
the rise of Star Wars style compositing. Yeah.
This film had it rough. This film was released just weeks after Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is, if you know what that is, it's Indiana Jones, and it's quite possibly one of the greatest movies ever made.
Just bad timing, right?
Just shitty timing.
Oh, yeah. 1981, dude, was a 81
was a banger. Yeah.
To actually try to
come out with something different.
Come up with something that could be competitive.
Yeah.
Because you had 81, you had Raiders of the Lost Ark, you had this, you had...
Escape
from New York,
which we covered already.
You had so many other, and even some cult classics that came out that I didn't realize, like Dragon Slayer. Dragon Slayer is a fantastic cult film, and that came out. And the effects in that one is amazing.
81 was a good time. I was 4 years in the making. I was in my dad's balls, but so I don't know anything about 81, but I know the movies.
I was already experiencing 3 years of misery at that point.
3 years of being alive and misery. Laurence Olivier was cast as Zeus to give the film some kind of extra star power. And I think he is Zeus in this movie.
He earned his paycheck.
Absolutely. The script kind of condensed several different Greek myths. The elements of Perseus, the Pegasus, Medusa, and the Kraken. Which is actually Norse. I don't know if you guys knew that, but the Kraken is technically Norse, not Greek. What I think one of the things I really love about this film is it balances kind of this like mythic seriousness with campy, like 80s goofy epic story. I think mostly if you like watch Harry Hamlin's, like how he plays Perseus is very campy,
it is.
But not in a bad way, no. Like just fun, right?
He plays it campy, but you can also tell that he takes the role serious.
That's the thing.
And I think that is the thing, David. Like there are actors that play into the campiness, and you can tell that they're playing into the campiness. This is a man who understood what the role was.
Yep.
And he played it, yes, campy, but there was a seriousness to the performance still.
And I think that goes beyond even to the other players in the cast. Because, I mean, if you look at a lot of the other actors, like Burgess Meredith is in this.
Yep.
Laurence Olivier is in this. They're all classically trained
Maggie Smith.
Yeah.
And all of them amazingly approach their characters with such, you know, conviction. That's
sophistication.
Like, yeah. There's a sophisticatedness behind all the camp.
I have such a hard time when I see Burgess Meredith not thinking like, you know, campy 80s Batman. Like I know, yes. Cause I know he's what, the Riddler he's the
Penguin.
The Penguin. That's right. That's right. And I'm just like, I see him and I just, he just, something about that guy.
He's also, isn't he?
He's Mickey from Rock. Rocky.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I wanted to discuss before we jumped into the first topic we're going to talk about is costumes. So one of the things I wanted to kind of bring up, and Mike, you and I kind of discussed this before David got here, was they remade this movie in 2010 with Sam Worthington. Personally, I actually liked the movie. I thought it was a decent remake with updated CGI. They stuck to the story pretty well.
It was just fine.
It was just fine. One of the things that I wanted to kind of discuss was, this is one of those movies they remade and a lot of people still like the original. And I think, Mike, you and I talked about how movies like this, like for me, I watched this movie 20 times as a kid. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. It was over the top and it had these crazy scenes and I loved these characters. And like, and then when I saw the original, it almost felt like it had no heart. And I think that's what I love about these old movies is, even though, yeah, the some of the scenes may look dated or the stop motion looks dated, it has heart. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, makes this movie stand out, is though maybe out of the three movies we've covered so far, visually it might not stand up the test of time. But like you said, the script is great. The I don't want to use the word member berries because that's not what this is. It's not even really nostalgia. I think it's just one of those things where you are connected to a movie. And I feel like this is one of those movies for me.
Yeah, same with me, Ryan. This is one of those films that I would have the VHS always in the VCR.
Yeah.
Like late 80s, early 90s, when VHS started to become more prevalent, I watched this movie. This one and Jason and the Argonauts, I watched continually. Yeah. I loved Greek myth and Greek, you know, Greek tragedy. I love all of that stuff. So I've always been drawn to it. But, you know, you bring up the reboots or the remakes, and I'm wondering if that's the reason why no one has gone back to the vault to pull the negative and give us a remastered version of the original. Because typically you would think with a film like Clash of the Titans, that is a beloved film, it is well remembered amongst people like ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're in an era right now where physical media is gaining popularity again, particularly with collectors.
Yep.
And I'm surprised that there are no plans
to do that,
to give us a remastered version of this film. And I'm wondering if it's because, rather than remastering this film, which does take effort, time, and, you know, a lot of time, I'm wondering if they figured, well, you know, we did the remake. Why go back?
I think you're right. I think it's kind of a travesty, to be completely honest, because this is the last, you know, kind of hurrah for stop motion and that kind of that before the ultra composited, like heavy matte painting stuff. And I think it is kind of a travesty that they won't have any plans to go back and give us a remastered copy of this. I think that, one, this would be, if any movie is you know, worthy of a remaster, I mean, this movie is definitely one of them.
Could you imagine if they went back and just fixed some of those, not the dated stuff, so there's some charming elements to that, but some of the the glaring mistakes when you watch on a modern television.
Yeah, that you can tell.
And you see like noticeable clipping, you know, and edge fringing. You see Poseidon, his legs are actually being cut off in the imperfect compositing when he's in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And then when Argos is destroyed, like for the most part, 90% of that looks pretty fucking great. But then when the people are running away from the running water, you see their legs disappearing.
Yes.
And even their arms as their bodies are leaving the rotoscoping framing. You can see their arms are being clipped. Mm-hmm. If they just fixed that stuff,
dude, I would.
This movie would be 1,000 times better to rewatch it.
Yeah, and I think like it, even guys, and if you're listening at home, like this is not us nitpicking. This is us saying that we love this movie so much that we would absolutely rewatch it multiple times if we just were able to remaster these things. Because, you know, watching this on a 80s boob tube television, it'd probably be fine. But we're watching them on 75-inch. Massive flat screens, you know, like and
maybe Ryan, we should get some old
boob tube
televisions when we review these. Maybe we should watch them how they were originally intended.
I don't know if I could listen to that sound and just fucking ass. Just I don't know, man.
There was a guy that reviewed stuff with me on this network several years back for the Weird West Radio podcast.
Yeah.
And he would only watch some of the old Westerns on the tube television.
That. I remember that.
He actually bought one so that he can watch things how they were meant to be viewed. And I'm like, I can appreciate that. I'm not going to do that, but I appreciate that.
I don't hate that. I mean, at that point, might as well just go get a projector and some reels and fucking watch it, you know?
Well, that's the funny part. I mean, nowadays, VHSs have turned into the film projecting almost type of thing now, because like I see so many collectors create their own kind of setup to actually watch old VHSs.
That's amazing.
Because like there's some VHSs out there. I mean, my dad has been collecting movies since the 60s. There's movies that I see in his collection. There's no, you can't find them anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, there's millions upon millions of Westerns that are actually lost because they don't remaster them since the VHS days.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. All right, so the first category we're going to jump into, and this one is one of my favorites. We're going to talk about costumes, okay? And then once we get from costumes, we'll go to props, because this movie has some pretty fucking cool props.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then we usually jump into matte paintings, visual effects, sets, things like that. So first thing we're going to talk about is costumes. And we always like to just start right off the rip with the main character. So let's talk about Perseus. So Harry Hamlin, one of the things I really liked about his costumes in this movie is simplicity. One of the things that I feel like on a lot of movies, and even some of the movies back in the day, they overcomplicated the main character's costume to a point where you almost got lost in the way that like it was more the costume than it was the character. And for example, one of the ones that I really liked recently, we did Masters of the Universe, and it was a simple Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. I feel like it's the same thing here with Perseus in this movie, is that they kept it very simple. You know, he didn't really have much armor or anything crazy like that. He had a tunic. And I love that they picked a white, you know, at first a white tunic for him to kind of like, okay, this guy's royalty, right? Like, he had winged sandals, helmet, and his sword, which we'll talk about in the props because those were fucking cool as shit. But I loved that they went with more of a, you know, less, you know, gritty kind of realistic look. Like if you watch like, you know, Gladiator or even the remake of this movie, they gave Perseus, I think is Sam Worthington in the remake, I think is who it is. They gave him, he looks homeless. Like, I think one of the things that like I liked about this is you felt like Perseus was, you know, he is a demigod. He looks like a demigod. And I think the thing with in the remake, he looked like a homeless dude that just happened to be Zeus's son.
That's what, okay. You and I are on the same page on that. And I think the reason is, I don't know if it's obvious or not, but with the original, they were clearly going for the heroic, white knight, virtuous protagonist look.
Yeah.
Whereas with the remake, they were going for the underdog.
I hate my dad.
This is the guy who has nothing, you know, that will help him. He's completely alone. Will he rise above? So it's very different angles that they took with the same protagonist, essentially.
Yeah, I think it was with Sam Worthington's character, it was the, you know, his character shunned the fact that his dad was Zeus.
Yes.
Whereas this Perseus, Harry Hamlin.
Did he even ever know? Was it clear that?
No.
No, it wasn't clear.
Because when he spoke to him, when Zeus spoke to him through, I think, the shield.
Yeah, he never said.
He didn't even tell him who he was, right?
He didn't tell him. And that was the thing about the character in the original with Perseus is like he essentially embraced his destiny, because that was the whole point about the Burgess Meredith character telling him, oh, this is what your destiny is going to be. This is what you're going to live up to.
Yeah.
And you bring up a good point when I think about it now, because I didn't realize it. The remake had the character of Perseus shun it and like run away from it. He didn't want it. His dad was
Liam Neeson. And I don't know if that seems kind
of, yeah, that's true.
You know, he has odd set of skills, you know,
so stupid. So dumb. I also wonder if it's just different themes they're working with. Like the remake is more designed to resemble Attic tragedy, you know, Greek tragedy.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you're
saying. Whereas this one's more fantastical.
Yeah, and I think that's also one of the
heroic.
Yep, I think that's one of the reasons why, as a young kid, you're like, oh, Perseus is cool as shit.
Building off of the whole Joseph Campbell like monomyth.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels like it's going for. I'm not talking about the man who refuses his journey like Luke Skywalker. I'm talking about Joseph Campbell's broader work and excavation of myth it's, you know, transposed onto film and literature.
Yeah.
That's probably what they were going for, especially since at that time Joseph Campbell was the shit. Luke Skywalker was designed after him. Indiana Jones in large aspects was designed after the hero's journey, if you will.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're a depressed society, even in 2010. So it would make sense. Like, well, okay, let's forget all that feel good heroic stuff.
Now we're gonna bring you down.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Watchmen?
Yeah.
Let me just go ahead and drag you real far.
Exact
down.
Same yeah. era. Yeah. yeah.
So I think we kind of touched on Perseus. I really want to talk about the one that I always like is the gods of Olympus. I love all the gods. I'm a sucker for that. And I think they did such a great job. I think there's only one other movie, and I'll mention it here in a second, but that I thought they did the gods amazing. But this one, they kind of went, you know, very classic. You know, they had glittering robes, theatrical robes with like metallic accents. They wore, you know, the togas. And I think they did a really good job of making them intentionally bright and radiant. So, you know, kind of give you that classic. And also the we'll talk about the set later, but like Olympus being this kind of like a stage. Right. And I think by putting them in those togas and the bright outfits, I think they did a really good job of adding this, like, you know, I'll use the word mythical, but like this over the top, like, hey, we are gods. The only other movie I thought they did a great job with was a movie with Henry Cavill.
Immortals. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite, like, Greek, like, dude, I love that movie.
Visually, it's awesome.
So the way that's the only other movie that I really thought they did an amazing job of, like, each god had its own theme, and they did such a great job of making them feel grandiose. But yeah, I felt like their costumes, and they did were very classic. I don't think they didn't go over the top. They didn't have a bunch of shit. You know, Poseidon didn't have a trident and all the shit that you thought that they would need. Like, they just, hey, this is so-and-so. Hey, this is so-and-so, you know, like, and I think
it was more grounded in a lot of ways because even the alleged gods, as they were depicted by the Greeks back in the day, they weren't elaborate.
No.
The big thing about the gods were, like, you had the game between all of them.
Which is so cool.
That was the thing that really brought out the chemistry out of all the characters. And that's what, honestly, a lot of people nowadays put visuals over everything. But if you have those moments, like, look at how that cast treated each other every time they're on set. It's insane that basically when you look at it, just like what you said, Ryan, it's a very stage-like atmosphere.
Which is cool.
Which also makes sense because you're dealing with people who view humanity as pawns.
As pawns.
They're simply statues to be moved in whatever place they wish.
And I love the fact that that's how they did, how they portrayed it, where they would take little figures of their chosen people. And my favorite moment was actually seeing the gods at their true power was like when they did the short story of Calibos and they take his little figure.
Ah, it's such a cool scene.
Through this animation and stop motion, they show how Zeus punishes him.
So cool.
And I'm like going, that's cool. There was nothing elaborate about it, but it was a great way of actually making a character.
David mentioned Calibos, and let's talk about Calibos costume. Quite possibly the coolest looking character.
Okay, I was about to say.
This is the coolest.
Oh my God, dude, yeah.
Quite possibly the coolest looking character in the movie. Calibos, like David said, was basically struck down by Zeus in this movie, changed exactly who he was, and they did an absolute fucking amazing job, not only for the close-ups of the actor Neil McCarthy. He wore prosthetics for the close-ups, which, I mean, if he really looked like that, fuck, that would suck. But also, they did the cutaway shots far away, and it's a stop-motion big like character.
Yeah.
And I think the blend of, you know, they did such a great job of basically making him look human and a satyr and like really emphasize the legs and his tail. And like, and even like later when he loses his hand and he has like the trident fucking stabby McStab awesome. Stab. Like, I think that this is by far, out of all the characters in this movie, this is by far the coolest character. And I remember as a kid when Andromeda goes to meet him for the first time and they like pan in on his face. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck?
I will also add that it is probably the best example for just how creative you can be to make something work, because you mentioned the various shots they used to create this character, just the sequence and editing that they went with. Okay, we're going to show the wide shots, you know, through stop motion, and then we're going to punch in when the audience needs to see someone real.
Yes.
We never saw Calibos in live action form from afar.
No.
The moment the camera either, you know, zoomed out or was positioned outward, a wider shot, we got the stop motion. And I feel like this is such a brilliant example of creativity at its finest. Because you mentioned, and I don't want to get off too off track, Ryan, so just cut me off. But you mentioned David a moment ago, the statue scene, how we saw his transformation.
Such a cool scene.
Through the statue itself. So Calibos, if you had to pick one just perfect example of a job well done, it has to be him.
Absolutely.
Oh, it has to be. Because
from costume,
everything
to props,
literally the coolest
character, the effects,
towards the actor,
absolute coolest character in the movie.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things we just covered costumes. We'll circle back a little bit here in a little bit, but what I really want to talk about is the props, because this movie has 80s essential props, and I say that in a good way, guys. So we always start with the main character. And we'll talk about Perseus's magical gear, the helmet of invisibility, the sword, and the shield.
And the shield.
Okay, really fast, Ryan. Like, I just love that homeboy's first reaction when getting an invisible helmet is to go into the bedchambers of Andromeda.
Yes. Like, all right. That's a dude move. Like, also,
first,
I mean, come on, dude. He wants to know what she looks like. He doesn't know what she looks like, so he's got to take the helmet to go be like, oh, see what she looks like.
First thing on my list here.
All right, let's go check out her bedchamber.
Use the helmet of perversion.
No, it's not the perversion. He's doing it for research.
It's for love, okay?
It's for love.
What I always thought was funny about that is later in the movie when they finally like fall in love, he's like, I fell in love with you the first time I saw you. And she's like, first time you saw me? He's like, yes, I was in your bedchamber. I was like, whoa. I mean, don't tell her your moves.
That would be a red flag right there. Any smart woman would be like, gone.
What the fuck? So one of the things that I thought was really cool and the culmination of my favorite scene of the whole movie is the fight with Medusa.
So oh, yeah.
Did you guys know that the fucking prop shield was actually polished and mirror-like on the inside? Dude, yeah. That is fucking cool, man.
Because they wanted to capture the shot of Perseus's face, his reflection in
so
it.
So cool. Wait,
so that was a real reflection?
That's a reflection.
How cool is that?
Yeah. And that to me is like so awesome that you go into that much detail with a prop.
I do. I love that. Look, even the sword.
You use it for camera techniques.
Yeah. Dude, the sword being shiny, the sword having gems in it. It was such a, his gear was so cool. And they all played a part. They were all made so, so cool. But the shield for sure was by far the coolest like VFX trick was to have that mirror finish.
The most creative.
Yeah. Very creative. Now
of Perseus's gear, right?
Yes. Now let's all talk about the coolest prop in the whole movie is Bubo.
Yes.
Let's be honest. It's basically Clash of the Titans. R2-D2 is essentially what it is. This is by far one of the absolute coolest fucking props. It is fully practical. It was remote controlled. And sometimes they use a stop motion mechanical owl, like for the like flying scenes or whatever, but the handheld prop was actually it moved. Fucking did everything. Kind of like when we talked about Master of the Universe with the key, this is on that level, right? Like obviously he was meant to be like a comic relief, you know, like R2-D2 kind of style character. But as a kid, when I saw fucking gold Bubo Owl, I lost my damn mind. I was like, I want one of these so bad I can't see straight.
As a kid, I was fine with it. When rewatching, I was like, this is why you gotta tarnish this. But this goes to show you what good writing and what a clever prop will do. By the end of the movie, you're like,
fuck, I want Bubo.
I like this character. He better not end. I forgot that he actually comes back from out of the water. I'm like, does he die?
You're like, no, not Bubo. No.
So that goes to show you what good writing as well as good visual effects, prop masters will do. Well, they will find a way to win you over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, Bubo is the coolest character, like as far as props go, for sure.
The amazing thing about that prop is the fact that it was designed so that they could do shots up close and you can literally feel like it's alive.
Yeah. And I think that's the coolest thing. It's the same thing they did with R2-D2.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Was there a midget in the,
there was a Bubo? Little person.
Was there a little person? Yes. In Bubo?
It's actually a Smurf. It was a Papa Smurf inside of it. Yeah.
It was a gnome. It was
That's the correct word for them. Some of the other things I just want to touch on real quick was some of the bow and arrows that Perseus used were hand-built for the production. Like, they weren't actual, like, they actually had to make them. And then one of the things I really liked, and this kind of goes into sets and stuff, which we'll move into in a little bit, was in her lair, in Medusa's lair, they use reflective surfaces and oil lamps. Yes. To set the mood in there, to give it like super eerie lighting, to make it feel like you were in a dark snake woman's fucking lair, which I thought was such a cool idea. Again, it goes back to practical effects, right? Yeah. Of such a movie.
I think Medusa's lair is probably one of the best sets.
Oh, it's absolutely one of the best sets.
So since we're going right into like, you know, matte paintings sets, we usually have to put those two together. So let's talk about visual effects, matte paintings. Let's jump right into like Olympus. So Olympus was mostly matte painting. I think one of the best parts of that, I think it was a mix of matte painting and mini. So that first scene where you see the seagull, I guess it was a seagull. I'm going to say it looked like a seagull at first. And then it kind of changed into this black thing flying in the air. Again, that scene where you see the composite of the matte painting and then the miniature of Olympus. Mm-hmm. On top of the mountain is one of the coolest shots ever.
Yeah, agreed.
Dude, I like, and I knew sitting there watching, I'm like, oh, this is a mini, right? Like, I know this is a miniature. I know this is a matte painting. But at the same time, I'm like, damn, it looks cool though.
Yeah, the compositing, the smoke work, or the, was it not, what's the term for it? Not smoke work, particle.
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 Oh, yeah.
I mean, you give me three or four scenes like that, which they did, then I'm not going to complain. If this is 1981, I'm not going to complain about some of the compositing and clipping.
Not exactly. At all. I think one of the other things too that I really enjoyed, and David, you jump in on this one too, is when they finally flood out Argus.
Yes.
So I was talking to Mike about this before you got here. When they flood out Argus, that original scene where, you know, Zeus is like, you know, release a Kraken, let's take care of Argus. They've done fucked up. Aaron. The scene is clearly miniature.
Yes.
But it is done so well and so cool with the composite and like composite, the people in there.
There's multiple layers.
There's multiple layers to that composition. And I think it was, not only did they did such a great job with the miniature in general, looking super cool, you know, with the statue falling apart with the water.
Yes.
You know, everything that was done was such a, for the time, like I said, if you took this movie back to 1910, people's brains would fucking explode.
Well, that's the amazing thing about that scene too, is like the craftsmanship that goes into it. It's almost like that is a perfect mix of everything that we as, you know, like me and Mike as filmmakers, we look at and we go, everyone was on their A game to get that scene done.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get down to the, even the miniatures and how they were able to use a lot of particle effects, a lot of like miniature effects. And then on top of that, you have the storytelling that's going on behind it. And it's like, I crack up that they did that specific scene. You never see the Kraken.
That's right.
You never see it
because
it's Kraken ass.
It's supposed to be kind of like a setup to show you, oh, when the Kraken shows up,
shit's about to go down.
It's about to go down.
Yeah. I think that's a smart move just in terms of storytelling as well.
Yeah,
because absolutely. Then you dread the return of the Kraken when you know he's going to appear at the end of the film.
When Poseidon is like looking up in it underwater and everything, it's just like, it's hilarious because it's kind of like, oh, it looks so cheesy, but it's so classically done. It's good.
Did they put him underwater and they're just like, all right, man, open your mouth.
You know what? That's one scene I don't know.
I don't know how they did it. I don't.
I honestly think.
Did they put him in water?
I read that basically they did underwater photography.
Okay.
Underwater filming.
And then they animated some of the.
How did he open his
particles mouth? In the water?
He just opened his mouth and was like, fuck it, you know? Like,
because his hair. I didn't think it was visual effects. There was no way at the time they could do that because his hair was floating perfectly.
They had to do
that's
a
underwater.
Lot of things. A lot of things either
I'm gonna look that
underwater
up.
Or they did it on set with using fans and stuff like that.
His hair is moving too.
Unless that's like ultra slow-mo.
You know what? They could have slowed it down.
Yeah, he just did this.
But think about it, Mike. Think about that. Me and you are like coming up with like how many cool things are we like thinking, how did they pull this off? When you look at a movie nowadays, you go, oh, okay, they pulled that off by, you know, doing it in After Effects or doing it on the atypical CGI program.
So one of the other ones that we talk about in visual effects or matte painting style is this in this movie, you would be remiss to not even mention it. And we've mentioned it 80 times already is the stop motion animation.
Yes.
There's Medusa, Calabas, Pegasus, the Kraken, the Scorpions, Bubo. You have tons of characters that are stop motion animated in this movie. And for the time, pretty fucking good. The Scorpions look unbelievable. Like the Scorpions to this day still look good.
They look better than the Scorpions in the remake.
That's very true. I mean, I mentioned it earlier, but Medusa's sequence.
And those green eyes just so good.
I think it still works. It's considered one of the finest things that Ray Harryhausen has done. The moody lighting, the realistic movement, the genuine suspense, just the way that Medusa looks, even the, like her taking the bow off her back and like knocking an arrow and shooting it at the, like, it is so good. And then even the close up when she, like the guy, the one soldier falls to the ground and the close up of her eyes.
Oh yeah.
Like it, just for that half a second shot, you see her actual eyes before they light up green.
You know, my favorite scene in that entire sequence is after he cuts her head off
And her head
and he holds her head.
Yes.
And you see the blood and the flesh dripping from her neck.
Yeah.
Like, this is a PG movie made in like 1981. And it looks very effective.
Well, yeah. Dude, that scene itself is the money shot when it comes to Perseus.
I mean, because I came watching it too.
When my favorite
I came when he was being breastfed.
I was like, dude, that's some nice ass titties.
I'm like, this is a PG movie. What's up with all the boobs?
His mom got some nice boobies, dude.
But like, I get why Zeus had sex with her.
Absolutely. Danae is hot, dude.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But like that particular scene is like when he's holding it up and music's playing, it's the ultimate hero shot. I mean, I even looked at it just recently. I'm like going, damn, going back to like what you're saying, Ryan, everything's so simple. But it feels so grandiose and epic.
They did such a great job with it. And I think that's why that scene, the fight with Medusa, is still my favorite scene in this whole movie. It is the culmination of, like, dude, like, speaking of sets and stuff, you know, or matte paintings, how about when he gets on the boat with Chiron and he, like, the fucking, like, dude, that's so cool to me. As a kid, I saw that and I was like, even as a 39-year-old adult, I was like, the river Styx. Yeah, like... They did.
Is that prosthetics or is that stop motion as well?
What, the skull, the hand?
No, the death or
Charon.
Is that stop motion or is that practical?
I think that's practical.
That's practical.
Dude, his face looks so good.
I think it's an actual like a dummy, like a puppet that they use. He looked fucking cool as shit. I just think that they, you know, the sets and the matte paintings were, and in the stop motion, the VFX were ahead of their time, or, you know, at the end of that era. And it just goes to show you that this was the end of that era. And I feel like this movie is owed a remaster. It just blows my mind.
It's also just, as we were saying at the top of the show, Ryan, this movie never got a fair shake because it was a victim of its release. It came out in 1981. They had started shooting this prior to all of the advancements that would take place because of Lucas's Star Wars. I mean, Lucas pushed the medium forward by like 10, 15 years in just a 3-year time frame. So here you have a movie like this that is being made by a studio. It's in reaction to what audiences want to see. So they're filming it unbeknownst to the fact that Lucas is changing the game and people are now expecting those smooth motion controlled rig visual effects that Lucas brought forward. And here we're being given stop motion, which looks great, but that's the reason why a lot of people, even at the time, had issues because they were already being exposed to more modern films, modern filmmaking.
I think so. Let's move into sets. We'll talk about sets here briefly. Since we're already talking about Medusa, we might as well just start with her lair. Just a dark, you know, lit literally entirely by flickering torches and oil lamps.
The lighting in that scene is just my favorite.
As soon as they get in there and you get into that like area and you're like, oh fuck, this is going to be bad. You know, like you look at it, just the set design just genuinely feels threatening. Like, holy shit, things are about to get like weird, you know? And when she crawls out for the first time in that scene, you're like, what the fuck?
And the hearing of the rattle.
God, the fact that they gave her a rattler is like the coolest thing ever, dude.
It's still effective.
It works, right?
It still works. I mean, I rewound that sequence several times because it just looks really great. In fact, if I had to like pinpoint a scene that's very memorable to me when watching films, there's two. Conveniently, this scene here with Medusa, I remember clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things that when I was a kid, I loved this entire sequence because of the sets. And then also Jason and the Argonauts when the skeleton army. Those are the two things I always think about when we talk about old Greek mythology films.
Absolutely. I think, you know, they're kind of like quintessential when you talk about that type of movie, you know, that stop motion-y, you know, but the skeleton army is definitely still one of the good ones. But I think with this one, Medusa just is that character, you know, like one of the other ones, we talk about the Kraken.
Yeah.
Right. You find the Kraken finale, you see the Kraken finally at the very end of the movie. And the fact that they use like live action, you know, ocean shots of, you know, Poseidon looking up in the air, you know, they used model ships, matte paintings, stop motion Kraken. And again, dude, like even to this day, like that version of the Kraken gets used in like funny jokes. Like it is iconic, yeah. Especially not only for this movie, but the grand climax of this movie. And like even pop culture, that version, air quotes, of the Kraken.
Is Release the Kraken from this?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
saying?
Release the Kraken. Yeah, Release the Kraken.
Is that
yeah.
where the saying got started?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was like, oh shit, is this where
this is where Davy Jones from? Released the Kraken, yeah.
Because I've heard that said for years.
Yeah, this is what's from.
But this is where it's from.
That's amazing.
So I think, you know, overall, when we talk about not only sets and matte paintings and visual effects, this movie for the time, you know, I'm a kid watching this, you know, 7 years old, and I'm just like, my brain is exploding. I think that I didn't see the titty though at seven. I don't remember seeing the titty. I didn't remember that until I rewatched it.
Yeah.
Same.
I was like,
same
here. Yeah.
I wonder if that was on the original cut, because I think I would have remembered that.
Yeah. That'd be my first movie.
As a child, that was like a,
I was the ripe age of three.
Yeah. Like you're like, daddy, why is that lady's booby out? Like
I'm hungry.
Yeah. God.
My fireman's doing strange things.
My fireman. What the fuck? Holy shit. All right. Anyways.
Stop motion.
Yeah, stop motion fireman dick. Oh my God.
Stop motion.
So some of the things we like to, at the end, guys, we like to do some extra, just some extra fun stuff, some fun facts. This was, you know, Harryhausen's final film. This is his last film.
Yep. Hey, this is a good one to go out on.
And a lot of times this Medusa sequence is still considered a masterpiece, you know, for what it is. I know that Bubo, they had kind of had this Bubo versus R2-D2 thing. You know, he was kind of the fun character of the movie. I know they actually made some toys based on Bubo because I guess he was incredibly popular with the kids.
Did they really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, which I kind of want to find one too. That'd be the coolest thing ever.
You and me both.
That'd be pretty fucking awesome. You know, Medusa's stop motion sequence again is it took 3 months to animate that frame by frame. 3 months. That's crazy. Crazy. One of the cool things that I read is that Harryhausen originally wanted Cerberus in the film. And they cut him because it was time and budget.
Yeah.
Dude, Cerberus would have been so fucking cool.
Didn't he have?
That's not Cerberus.
Who was that?
Cerberus has three heads.
Three heads.
Oh, so who's the two-headed one?
I think it was just two-headed. They were like, oh, let's make this dog up.
Well, budget cuts, so we're going to make up a character.
When did Chernobyl happen? Is that 80? That's where they got the dog from. They were like, yeah.
The two-headed wolf. Or whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever it was. But Cerberus would have been super cool. I mean, that would have been such a neat thing, especially, you know, with Greek mythology. Laurence Olivier filmed almost all of his scenes in 10 days.
Which is amazing.
They were like, all right, we got him for 10 days, guys. Okay, be Zeus. You know, like, dude, that's crazy. 10 days.
That's like unheard of.
Well, and also it's pretty easy to schedule though, because he pretty much is shot in one.
Yeah, he didn't leave.
One set. So you can probably get it done in less than 10 days.
But think about it though, Mike. Nowadays, you would never see that done. No actor mind would ever do that.
This is cool. The Kraken's roar was created by mixing elephant calls, slow down animal growls, and reversed sound effects. Kind of the same way they made the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. They a mix of a bunch of different animals.
That's creative. I think that's... Oh, it's just sad.
It hurts your heart.
Yeah,
hurts,
there's so much creativity that goes into making a movie like this. And then in 10 years, it's just going to be all AI doing it.
So true.
No creativity whatsoever.
The Pegasus was a combination of obviously real horse, which you see the close-ups of his face, puppet head for close-ups, and then stop motion wings.
Yes.
Which was really cool.
Wait, they did use a puppet head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't even pick up on that.
And this is, again, this is kind of the last thing. This movie is one of the last major Hollywood epics shot entirely without digital effects.
Oh, end of an era.
Doesn't that hurt?
End of an era. 1981.
Dude, that is crazy to me.
Everything changed after that.
everything
thank
changes.
You. Thank you, George Lucas.
Thanks a lot, George Lucas, you asshole. So, in closing, this is still in my heart, one of my all-time, as a kid, I watched this movie so many times. And the feelings that it brought back watching it again before we did this show, it's hard to explain. And I know, Mike, you felt the same way.
Yeah.
And
I'm not one to be, you know, wrapped up in super nostalgia yeah. but this did it.
Yeah. So that is going to wrap up our show. So that is the third movie in our, I guess, if you want to call our trilogy.
Our
bullet time trilogy of movies. And so just so you guys know, we will be doing more of these. We usually like to, what we like to do is do them in threes. We pick three movies. So I'm going to read out a list, David. I've already kind of in my head know which three that we're going to do our next three movies on.
Okay.
So this is the list that we have to work from. And I'm going to, so we got Cobra, Tremors, Tango yeah. and Cash.
Yes.
Lethal Weapon, Roadhouse, Hard Target, Big Trouble in Little China, The Golden Child, Bloodsport, Red Heat, Delta Force, Buckaroo Banzai, and Trancers.
Oh, okay. That's a good
So that's list. Our list so far. We're going to keep adding to it, but the three movies that we will come back to. Are you ready for this? Mike, are you ready for this?
I thought we were going to have a democracy. I think we're going to vote. No,
fuck that. I just made it up.
he's made the decision.
This is my show. I'm fucking vetoed. What
a tyrant.
You made him lead host.
I haven't been lead host in a long time. So you know what? I'm fucking taking control. So we are, the first movie we're coming back with is Cobra.
That's a good one. Pick.
The second movie is Big Trouble in Little China.
Thank you.
And the third movie, which Mike has never seen, The Golden Child.
That one is like
so good.
So good.
So good.
That is probably arguably Eddie Murphy's best.
Really?
It's so movie. Good, dude.
Maybe I've seen it.
My brother Noomsi.
Anyways, so guys, that is going to do it.
I want the nine.
God damn it. I love that movie. So that is going to do it for our third episode of Bullet Time 80s Action Rewind, Clash of the Titans. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please go back and listen to our other two and get ready for our next episode on Cobra. We'll see you guys next time.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.